Madam President, we live in perilous times. The leader of the free world's power has become so neutered, he cannot even, with the support of a majority of the Senate, appoint highly qualified individuals endorsed by the American bar to a federal court. He cannot conduct a war without being torn to shreds by partisans with their eyes set not on the defeat of our enemy, but on the defeat of our president. The U.S. Senate has become just one big, bad, ongoing joke, held hostage by special interest and so impotent an 18-wheeler truck loaded with Viagra would do no good. Andrew Young, one of the most thoughtful men in America, recently took a long and serious look at the United States Senate. He was thinking about making a race for it. And after visiting Washington, concluded that the Senate is composed of, and I quote, a bunch of pompous old, and I won't use his word here, I'll say folks, listening to people read statements they didn't even write and probably don't believe, unquote. The House of Representatives, theoretically the closest of all the federal government to the people, cannot restrain its extravagant spending nor limit our spiraling debt. And incumbents are so entrenched, you might as well call off 80% of the House races. There are no contests. Most of the laws of the land, at least the most important and lasting ones, are made not by elected representatives of the people, but by unelected, unaccountable legislators in black robes who churn out volumes of case law and hold their jobs for life. A half dozen dirty bombs the size of a small suitcase planted around the country could kill hundreds of thousands of our citizens and bring this nation to its knees at any time. And yet we can't even build a fence along our border to keep out illegals because some nutty environmentalists say it will cause erosion. This government is in one hell of a mess. And frankly, as Rhett Butler said, my dear, very few people up here give a damn. It's not funny. It's sad. It's tragic. And it can only get worse, much worse. What this government needs is one of those extreme makeovers they have on television. And I'm not referring to some minor nose job or a little Botox here and there. Congressional Quarterly recently devoted an issue to the mandate wars, with headlines blaring, "Unfunded mandates add to woes," states say. Localities get the bill for beefed up security. Transportation money comes with strings, and Medicaid stuck in funding squabbles, etc., etc., etc. One would think that the much heralded unfunded Mandate Reform Act of 1995 never passed. The National Conference of State Legislatures has set the unfunded mandate figure for the states at $33 billion for 2005. This, along with the budget problems they've been having for the last few years, has put states under the heel of a distant and unresponsive government. That's us. And it gives the enthusiastic tax raisers at the state level the very excuse they're looking for to dig deeper and deeper into the pockets of their taxpayers. It's not a pretty picture. And no matter who you send to Washington, for the most part, small, smart, and decent people, it is not going to change much. Because the individuals are not so much at fault as the rotten and decaying foundation of what is no longer a republic. It's the system that stinks. And it's only going to get worse because that perfect balance our brilliant founding fathers put in place in 1787 no longer exist. Perhaps then the answer is a return to the original thinking of those wisest of all men. and how they intended for this government to function. Federalism, for all practical purposes, has become, to this generation of leaders, some vague philosophy of the past that is dead, dead, dead. It isn't even on life support. The line on that monitor went flat some time ago. You see, the reformers of the early 1900s killed it dead and cremated the body when they allowed for the direct election of United States senators. Up until then, U.S. senators were chosen by state legislatures, as James Madison and Alexander Hamilton had so carefully crafted. Direct elections of senators, as great and as good as that sounds, allowed Washington's special interests to call the shots, whether it's filling judicial vacancies, passing laws, or issuing regulations. The state governments aided in their own collective suicide by going along with that popular fad at the time. Oh, I know, today it's heresy to even think about changing the system. But can you imagine those dreadful unfunded mandates being put on the states, or a Homeland Security bill being torpedoed by the unions if U.S. senators were still chosen by and responsible to the state legislatures? Make no mistake about it. It is the special interest groups and their fundraising power that elect U.S. senators and then hold them in bondage forever. In the past five election cycles, senators have raised over $1.5 billion for their election contest, not counting all the soft money spent on their behalf in other ways. Few would believe it, but the daily business of the Senate is actually scheduled around fundraising. The 17th Amendment was the death of the careful balance between state and federal government. As designed by that brilliant and very practical group of founding fathers, the two governments would be in competition with each other, and neither could abuse or threaten the other. The election of U.S. senators by the state legislatures was the linchpin that guaranteed the interest of the states would be protected. Today, state governments have to stand in line because they are just another one of the many, many special interests that try to get senators to listen to them. And they are at an extreme disadvantage because they have no pact. You know what the great historian Edward Gibbons said of the decline of the Roman Empire? I quote, "The fine theory of a republic insensibly vanished," end quote. That is exactly what happened in 1913 when the state legislatures, except for Utah and Delaware, rushed pell-mell to ratify the popular 17th Amendment, and by doing so, sliced their own throats and destroyed federalism forever. It was a victory for special interest tyranny and a blow to the power of state governments that would cripple them forever. And so, instead of senators who thoughtfully make up their own minds, as they did during the Senate's greatest era of Clay and Webster and Calhoun, we now have too many senators who are mere catpaws for the special interest. It is the Senate's sorriest time in a long and checkered and once glorious history. So having now jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge of political reality, before I hit the water and go splat, I have introduced a bill that would repeal the 17th Amendment. I use the word would, not will, because I know it doesn't stand a chance of getting even a single co-sponsor, much less a single vote beyond my own. Abraham Lincoln, as a young man, made a speech in Springfield, Illinois, in which he called our founding principles, quote, "a fortress of strength," end quote. And then he went on to warn that they, again, I quote, "would grow more and more dim by the silent artillery of time," end quote. A wise man, that Lincoln, who understood and predicted all too well the fate of our republic and the fate of our government. Too bad we didn't listen to him. Thank you, Madam President. I yield the floor.